history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are seemingly ordinary Americans around you with extraordinary stories to tell. And we don't want to miss the opportunity to listen to those stories. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we sure learn a lot. We are educated, we are entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. 5 months ago, we marked the 75th anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Now this weekend marks the 75th anniversary of an event that isn't as well known, but claimed the lives of thousands of Americans and Filipinos, and was later declared a Japanese war crime. I'm referring, of course, to the infamous Bataan Death March, when approximately 75,000 American and Filipino troops who had been undersupplied, underfed, abandoned, and eventually surrendered to the Japanese were forced to make a 65-mile march with little to no food or water. A quarter of them died on the march. Thousands more would die in captivity that followed. We've heard from a few Bataan Death March survivors over the years on Hometown Heroes, but one voice we haven't heard from here is that of the first survivor I ever had the privilege of meeting, a gentleman by the name of Ben Ciccone. When I started interviewing veterans on television a dozen years ago, he was gracious enough to share some of his story, and I wish I knew then what I know now. I wish I knew how to ask better questions, because his story is absolutely amazing. Ben died in 2007, just before his 95th birthday. But I have pulled up a few of his memories to share with you today before we hear from other survivors of the Death March. Ciccone grew up in Salinas, California. He joined the California National Guard at age 17, and 12 years later, his tank company was called to active duty. He was in the Philippines when the Japanese launched their surprise attack on American positions, and after 4 months of fighting, with food and medicine dwindling and no help coming from American forces, he became part of a mass surrender on April 9th, 1942. Although you're going to hear him explain why he was actually on the death march longer than most were. For decades, this incredible ordeal of the death march and the 3 years of captivity that followed were things he just couldn't talk about, because really, who could possibly understand?
At first, when I come home, I had nothing else to talk about. It was a prison camp, you know, going 5 years. And then after a while, people started looking at me kind of funny. And my brother said, I wasn't talking much anymore. I said, well, everybody looks at me though I'm lying or something. And I just didn't care about talking about it. But a lot of days, I don't remember what happened on the march. And they say I was a survivor. And one of the longest, too, by the way, where I was caught. You see, that's why what you read in history, they say 55, 60 miles. Well, I went over 100 miles, and it took me 13 days, because on the wrong side of the island. I had my platoon. We were supposed to counterattack and then cut across and get on the easy road back, but I started back. The Japanese had artillery set up there, so I had no choice but to back up. When I got there, they started the march. I was running the tail end. That's why I was 13 days. Wow. It was most of them 5, 7, 8 days. And if I could have crossed the island, then I'd have been a lot better. And along the march, I don't know how many days we were on it, but he got us all out. He put us on the field. Well, in comes a sharp. He graduated from the University of California, or Southern California. Born ways here. He called us every dirty, rotten name he could, some I didn't even know about. Made us take our hats off and sit out in that sun with no water and nothing for about 8, 9 hours. And he called us every dirty name. Well, we lost 10,000 men on the march and dead all over the place. But as far as food, we had a rice ball along the way. But you're talking about 2 weeks. I had another buddy, and we couldn't go any further, so we fell out. But lucky, I don't know how long I was there, 2 or 3 days. And finally, some guy striking telephone wire, and he hit us, and of course, to get the hell out. back in the highway again. So we had to go. We got in the highway waiting for the stragglers and couldn't find out. It was only a couple of miles where we ended up, but there was about 50. And when we got in this place with a number of maggots and dead people, next morning there was only 8 alive and the rest were just dead. The last stop, we took a break. We were just dead tired. We were off the road. And there was a Filipino. I gave him a little water, but he died. So we flopped down. And then they said the Jap guards were covered up. So we just stayed there and played dead. Thank God the guy next to me was dead. They just hit us with a rifle and just kept on going.
What happened after that?
We finally got up and joined the trek again. You had to get out on the road. If they caught you, they would kill you.
And thousands upon thousands died, whether that way or otherwise. In fact, an accurate estimate of just how many died is still elusive because of the way it all unfolded. But you're facing the prospect of dying from starvation or from exhaustion, by cruelty at the hand of your captors, and in all likelihood, you're never going to see your wife and kids again.
My wife waited 3 years before she even knew I was alive. My wife had to go to work. And I had 2 children and a grandmother living with her. So my wife, lucky she's a college graduate, she got a job and then she worked in theater at nights and then she done some waitress work on Saturday night. She went to the Army. You know, I haven't got any money. My husband's as a prisoner of war. You know, oh, no, he's missing an accident. Well, we got to have something for your husband. You know, what a silly thing to tell my wife. So she had to go home and nobody gave her nothing. Took her 8 months before she got a dime. The Japanese put out a propaganda that I was being held. Then she heard the official word was just a month before I was liberated. I wasn't liberated, I liberated myself.
And we want to hear about the liberation, but before we get to that, I understand you were 174 pounds when you got to the Philippines, that on the march you got down to about half of that. But one of the things that helped you gain back a little bit of that weight after the march is that you actually befriended some of your captors?
I made friends. Matter of fact, my life was saved by this Nagano-san up there. I went to Japan to see him, and if it wasn't for him, like I tell you, in May, it took most of my men I could find. It took us 3 hours to walk about 100 yards to get on this truck. If you get on the truck, you'd go into detail. And they took about 300 of us. Then the next day we went on. They stopped the convoy. 150 went on ahead, and 150 of us stayed in this little town of Kalawan. And lucky, there's where we had a Japanese captain, professor at the University of Tokyo, spoke English. And he gives a talk that told us we fought a good war, we had to obey his laws, and there was no other way. And he would take care of us or feed us till we could go to war. He called in doctors, had the Filipinos bring us meat and food. We didn't have to do anything for 2 weeks if it wasn't for him. And then I got the job working in the kitchen, and this Nagano-san, the one up there, took a liking to me. He took care of me like I was a baby, I guess. Made give me sugar, smokes, and everything. So for 2 weeks, we didn't do anything. And if it wasn't for that, we'd all die.
So now,
let me tell you the rest. The 150 that went above us, only 8 survived that. We were lucky, that whole group, that 150 of us. We lost 7, and they would have died anyway. They were too sick to start with. But if it wasn't for them, and like I say, that Nagano-san, he helped save all our lives there, not only me. Then the story goes on for years.
Yeah, and you actually went and found him in Japan 8 years after the war and thanked him?
When I found out he was alive, we went to Tokyo, and I were at the Imperial Hotel. When I got downstairs, right in the early part of the evening, I spotted him with the stuff in his hands. He spotted me, put our arms around each other, and cried. In Japan now. That's something else.
Man, what a story. And you hinted at the story of your liberation. You said you liberated yourself. There were no rescuers. You just had to kind of figure out when it was safe to leave?
Somebody hollered, here's some planes circling and circling. Wondering what the hell he was doing and hoping they were Americans.
Yeah.
And finally, he made about 4 loops and he went over to prison camp, run into this mountain or dropped the food. That's when we actually knew that then the war was over. The day before, the sergeant came over, because I was a big wheel, and he came over, hey, Sergeant Coney. He says, nobody over there, Jap's quarters. I said, what do you mean nobody's there? There's nobody there at all. He said, does he got a radio? No, they took everything. Go over there, nobody there. So we talked, what are we going to do? I said, right now, we're going to do nothing. So about the second day, let's break in at the storeroom to see if it says D. I ain't breaking nothing. So on the third day, we decided the hell would I go in and at least get enough. We weren't eating rice anyway. That's another misconception. We were eating maize, chicken feet, unfit for human consumption, and some barley, uncooked. And finally, then when they dropped the food, you know, when these airplanes, we saw these parachutes open, and what happens? Now we're not only crying, I got attacked with malaria.
Oh, no.
You can't smell food. You don't eat 2-3 days. I don't care how hungry you are, because I had an attack of malaria.
So he couldn't eat for a few days, but he was able to taste freedom again, finally. Mr. Ciccone would later spend 30 years volunteering to help other veterans connect with the benefits they were due. He held on to diaries that had been kept by fellow prisoners, and he told me that he planned to have those diaries burned eventually because some of the material they contained was just too extreme for most of us to handle. Another example that even as much as some of these veterans do open up in later years, what they share with us here is only the tip of the iceberg. We're going to take a break here, but when we come back, more voices from the Bataan Death March, including one 96-year-old who has just written a book dedicated to those who died on the march, and the eerie reports he's received from friends in the Philippines about what they reportedly hear along the tragic trail where so many perished. If you'd like to learn more about Ben Ciccone and his prisoner of war experience, I have some links for you at hometownheroesradio.com, and we'll be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.